Get your hands up.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. And we have guys. We have guys here.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that kind of sounds a little.
It feels like a real podcast.
Yeah, I know. Today.
We really want girls.
You know.
That's right. I thought it was going to be me and Rob.
Could have been.
I could have been. Over here on my right, and for you guys who don't know, on podcast 113, it was kind of slim pickings, but it was a great show. It was
I
a
bet
good
it
show.
Was.
But over here on my right, we've got the one and only Bobby Osinski. Bobby.
Happy New Year, Mike. Happy New Year, everyone.
Yeah. Happy New Year, Bobby.
Woo! And next to him, we've got Scott Gershon. Scott.
I've got the camera.
Hi there, Mike.
That would be Scott.
And next to him, we've got Forrest Robinson. Forrest.
Yeah. Hello there. Hello there, Mike.
How you doing, Forrest?
I'm fine. I'm hanging in there, brother.
Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you.
And next to him, we've got the one and only Diego Stucco.
Wow, thank you. I upgraded to the one and only. Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
That's quite good going.
I want to hear what you say about Rob now.
So I think we should have matched pair of them.
That's right, right.
You imagine.
And next to him, we've got...
Oh, we have.
We have?
We have got.
We have.
We have
got.
We have got. We've got.
My third podcast this year.
Bobby Somerville.
Hello, Jake.
Wow, the energy in the room.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And finally, on my left, we've got
the man, the myth,
the anchor, the stud,
the Charles Carroll,
the Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast, Rob Arbiter.
Yeah.
Hello there, gentlemen.
And the cross dresser as well.
Yes, well, that's, you know, that's why this is radio or whatever we call it.
That is California. Yeah.
Guys, this is show 114. Woo! 114.
Wow.
Can you believe that? 114 shows.
They said it wouldn't last.
That's right.
He brought you.
And this is our New Year show. This is our last show of the year, or the first show of the new year. Depends on when we post it. So we either have celebrated or will celebrate the new year.
Exactly.
Either way, I want to wish everybody a happy new year. And so on that note, we're going to talk about a lot of things. But on the second half of the podcast, you want to stick around because I guarantee you what we talk about will absolutely make whatever you're working on sound better.
Fantastic.
How's that for a tease?
Nice, nice tease.
Cool.
The volume knob.
So I missed you guys.
The mute button.
Turn it counterclockwise.
So I want to start off talking about, Diego has a new instrument.
Nice.
And if you go to his Facebook or his website, you can see his new instrument. And how do you pronounce this instrument?
Is that legal? Is that legal to show?
It is.
Okay.
Yes. Only in certain countries, though.
Yeah.
It's called Gramohanger because it's a combination of a gramophone horn and clothes hangers. So does it make any sense? I don't know. But
yeah.
Anyway.
And actually, if you listen to the little demo that you posted, it's actually pretty cool.
It's pretty freaking cool.
It has a really good, just this eerie type of
sound. You can't really play any symphonic works with that. So,
but how has a really great metallic sheen.
Oh yeah,
I mean, how did you build it? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the story is that after I did music from a dry cleaner, I took home with me probably a dozen of those cheap clothes hangers that they use at the dry cleaning place. And I was cutting them in half and in different spots. So when you cut them, they make different notes and they also, they really turn themselves into something else. They can be called notes, but definitely different set of overtones.
Right.
And then I was trying to find a way to amplify the sound. So at first I tried to stick them to the body of a cello. But that didn't work well. I mean, it might work well, but maybe later on. And then I found this gramophone horn, and I thought, this could work. And also would make sense visually, because otherwise...
Looks lovely, yeah.
And so I screwed them in, And then I attached the whole thing to a bedside table that I bought at Target, just because I love bedside tables. And it needed to be blue, okay? So I got this one.
You love it a lot.
Seriously, yeah, the cool. Visual aspect, because I need to be inspired by this
thing. That's cool.
And then I just put the microphone inside and thought to record this thing. I knew that I couldn't record anything melodic.
Right.
So I went for the raw sounding, right. Cinematic, you know, very aggressive sounding, right. Way. And
do you still take acid? Do you?
No. No, I stopped, but I think it's still hitting my brain.
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like an analog theremin, you know? It's like,
in a way, yeah.
You know, I mean, the tone isn't the same, but it's like...
Yeah, a theremin went wrong, kind of. Something like that. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So
thanks.
Have you used it on any particular project, or you just wanted to do
that
it?
That was the first piece I made, and it was a way to, you know, get used to the sound and try to figure out what's... And actually, it's very easy to record. You put a mic in it, that's it. And then obviously there's a little bit of mixing, and I recently discovered the you know, the mute button, the solo button, the
indicator,
the knobs.
What are they? I don't know.
Oh my God, those are insane. Yeah. I mean,
so if people want to check it out, your Facebook page, or is it on your website too?
It's on my Facebook page. Actually, it's on Vimeo and YouTube.
Okay.
And there's pictures on my Facebook page.
That's cool.
It's a brilliant
instrument.
Thank you very much.
Check it out. It's really neat. And man, there's nothing you won't use to make sound, will there?
I don't know. We'll see.
The front door's going next.
Give me my clothes back.
Anyhow, well, that's great. So check it out. I encourage people. It sounds really cool. Hey, we're going to move on. I wanted to talk a little bit on this front half about something that I recently did, and that's I tried iTunes Match. I don't know if anybody is familiar with iTunes Match.
And did it work?
It did. And actually, iTunes Match, basically what it is you pay $25. It scans your iTunes library.
$25 a year.
That part works for 25. Sure.
It scans your iTunes library, and it will basically put in a locker in the cloud, which is offsite storage, all the songs that you've purchased in iTunes. And at no matter what bitrate that you bought them at, it upgrades everything to the highest bit, like 256, I think.
Luxury.
So you've got, you know, you've got all these great sounding, basically MP3s. But the other thing that it does that's pretty cool is anything that you have in your library that's 200 megs or below, it will upload into the cloud. And so you'll have basically offsite storage for any of your stuff. So I have a lot of music mixes at various stages of some music that I'm working on that it uploaded to the cloud. Now I have access to it on my iPad as well as on my iPhone. And any device that I log into my iTunes account with, I have access to it. And it's, I'll tell you, it was really painless. It scanned my library. It was almost, you know, it only took me probably about a half an hour to identify all the songs and then to match them. And then it took me overnight to upload all the stuff that wasn't in iTunes. But it's pretty phenomenal. I mean, it got me thinking a lot. I mean, the first thing I did is I went to my iPad and I deleted all the media that I have on the pad itself because there's just no reason to have it on there. Because now I don't use my iPad too often to listen to music, but if I did, it's available. The second thing that it allows you to
do... As long as you have a connection.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yep. There you go.
But if you get on an airplane all excited that you got all your music at your fingertips...
It's going to be a lonely ride.
But the cool thing is you can download...
So it's basically streams off the cloud?
Yeah, but you can download your music to your device. So if you were going on, let's say, an airplane ride and you wanted to download onto your device, you could do that too. Just set up a couple playlists and download it. It just gives you... It's a tremendous flexibility of how you listen to your music, and it's pretty terrific.
I have a question regarding the music that you make, for example, and you happen to have in your library. What happens? I mean, does it recognize something similar, or it only matches with the songs that you purchased?
No, it only matches the songs that you purchased. It'll give you an option if it thinks it's found a duplicate. It says, "Hey, you have a version of this on the cloud already. do you what want if to you, keep this version?
What if you imported or maybe recorded stuff from vinyls?
Yeah,
and stuff like
that. If it's your own stuff and it doesn't recognize, it will upload it to the cloud. It will upload.
Anyway.
Yeah, as long as it's below 200 megabytes,
okay.
It will upload your music to the cloud, which is pretty amazing.
Well, for anything you've bought, though, does it actually upload it, or is it just a pointer to the song because
it
has the library?
It's probably a match. It's not an. It doesn't upload it. It probably just
because they give you better quality anyway.
Exactly.
Later.
Yeah, and so. You know what's amazing? I don't know if you guys remember this, but back in the late 90s, there was a site called mp3.com.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Which basically tried to do the exact same thing. Literally the exact same thing. It said, hey, listen, we're going to make available all these MP3s. All you have to do is put your CD into the CD. It's going to read the number off the CD, and then it makes available the CDs from your locker. And they got sued out of existence.
Well, you know the difference?
No, tell me.
Well, back then,
the record labels, right?
Yeah, they had no licensing agreement. So I think it was A&M actually started it, and it was backed up by Universal, and they sued the living bejesus out of them. Yeah. But now the real trick is with iTunes Match is they already have deals with everybody, licensing deals. Yep. Now, the problem for an artist is they paid, I don't know, like $50 million or something. But the artists don't get anything. And the reason why, whenever there's a licensing deal, the record labels look at it as part of their bottom line. It's not a sale. It's a license that they're giving you. So they're under no obligation to give the artist what they
never negotiated the license. I mean, that kind of licensing.
Let's go to direct. It's, well,
it's going
to
be short.
Goes directly to the bottom line. Well, yeah.
I got to imagine from a business standpoint that the artist, especially artists who have some power, that says, okay, you can do this, but we want these rights.
You know what? Going forward, on new contracts,
But I'll tell you what, as a consumer, I think there's nothing wrong, nothing hurting the artist by them having the iTunes Match. It's a win-win. It's a win-win for the consumer, and it's a win-win for the artist because I'm more apt to buy more music now because I know I'll have it, and I know I can have it across a lot of platforms. And you're not – you have to buy the music first. So you
it's only matching things you already
own.
What about if you pirate stuff, if you've got a lot of pirated stuff?
You have – I think it's 25,000 song limit anyway. So it's not like people are going to be uploading all this, tons and tons of, four terabytes worth of music.
But there are people out there that they have
years of,
What if the half of your library and it's below that number, it's pirated?
What if? They still own it, so it's not like it's,
But can anybody have access to that cloud?
No, you're only access to your, whatever you have, it's only access it through iTunes, and you can only have...
The iTunes can be strict with that security.
Exactly, you only, iTunes, it's like, you can have five devices or something like that.
Yeah, you're not sharing with anyone.
You're not sharing. It's not a sharing.
File
it's not
sharing
a blanket.
Which is what MP3 was.
Right, exactly. I was going to say that was the major difference. Yeah. Everybody could access everybody else's library.
But what's amazing is you start thinking differently about your music and about your just all your whole entertainment. Here's something that's interesting that happened. My XM radio... when I bought my car, I had a subscription, and then I kept it going, and then I canceled, and then I said, hey, no, we'll give you 6 months for, like, ridiculous, like $30 or $20 or something like that. So I said, okay, no problem. And then I finally let it lapse, and I got the email, it's coming up for renewal. I'm like, I'm not going to do it. And I let my XM radio lapse, and I thought I was going to miss XM radio. But between Spotify and apps I'm covered with everything I used to listen on my satellite radio.
And you still have time to work, actually.
But in your car, though, it's downloading from
exactly.
your car.
Exactly. Here's what I use. Like, I like sports a lot, so I like ESPN. And the good thing about XM Radio ESPN is it was the national feed, right? So it was what went out. And sometimes there's some of the local shows that I'm not a big fan of, so I like to listen to the national feed, so I'd hit the satellite. Well, ESPN came out with an app for $3, that is their radio podcast center app. Bought it once for $3. I can stream. They stream their national feed on that. Well, on my phone, I've got unlimited data, and it's tiny amount anyhow because it's talk radio.
Yeah.
And so I just have my iPhone plugged in, and I get my talk radio, the national feed that I like.
TuneIn Radio is good for that, too.
But what's the quality of the music, though?
The music, I go to Spotify, and the Spotify music is great.
And from your car?
Yeah, I just on my phone. Once again, I pay for it.
Right.
I pay a monthly fee
but I get
all the music that I want. So here's where that came into play. I was with my kids this weekend, and they wanted to listen to Christmas music. Well, I used to go to XM Radio because they used to have all these special Christmas channels. I just went into Spotify. Christmas music. Poof!
There you go.
All the Christmas music that I needed, and the kids were all happy. And it's just like it's so amazing how this is just changing our lifestyle. And it's, you know, the future doesn't. I always say it doesn't make itself known. It's never gonna, you know, hey, this is now the future. It just kind of creeps in these little things.
I think Apple should hire you and your family for a great commercial. No, he definitely gets it. Okay, they put something out and he totally understands how to use it.
But it's not even Apple too, because you can do these with other services. Although, you know, I've tried Amazon and I've tried some of the other ones, and you know, Apple still has it's still the smoothest. It's the easiest to kind of get around in. But what's amazing is just the way it's going to start shaping not only just how we listen to music, but I think it's going to start shaping our hardware decisions, our hardware purchases.
But here's the downside, though. There's a number of artists that are now eliminating streaming from their distribution. The Black Keys, Coldplay, Radiohead refuse to stream. Refuse to allow their music to be streamed. And if enough artists do that, that will put a serious kink in everything.
And you know what?
Why are they refusing that?
Because
they don't make any money. And you know what?
I'm okay with that.
I think there's a place for artists to not stream, because it's kind of ridiculous that
I can go on.
What's
the difference between streaming and radio?
Hold on. Well, exactly. But it's kind of ridiculous that, you know, you can go on to Spotify and the latest album from somebody you can look up and boom, you start streaming it. I would be okay with the service if they didn't have anything newer than, you know, 2 years or something. If it was for a backlog of catalog of artists, because I think it opens up for me. It's Spotify is the most useful for stuff that I want to listen to that I may not want to buy, but like if I, you know. Okay.
You just want to listen to it once.
Right. Yeah. Like, here's the thing. I'm going to make a confession. You guys are going to laugh, but like, I love like
Abba.
Disco. Disco has awesome.
I'm with you. I'm with you on this.
I don't necessarily have to buy.
What's your favorite disco song on the spot? What is it?
By far, it's probably Heatwave.
Oh, Heatwave. Okay.
So anything from Chic for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good band. That's great.
I've used disco in master classes at LA Music Academy, and while folks were laughing, I just said, and I quote, and it was bass player master class too, which you guys know, all right? So I'm telling bass players, okay, I know everybody's laughing. I said, this is great. This is exactly what I want you to do. But, you know, I put on the Emerald City sequence from the Wiz. I said, y'all just listen to this. You know, Quincy Jones production, the whole bit. I thought that they would all have big streams of drool when they sat and listened to what Anthony Jackson was doing, what that whole band was doing. Yeah. They flipped out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yep, disco.
Heatwave, Grooveline, come on.
Grooveline.
I mean, that's like, come on, it's all skate, you know? I mean, it's just, that was. But I don't, you know, I just like to listen to it every now and then. So it's great for stuff like that where you can go.
But the thing is, though, actually, I mean, Grooveline's from that era, but Grooveline isn't a disco.
No, I know.
Boogie Nights was the jam, too. That was mine.
I tell you, funny, the quintessential was the Saturday Night Fever stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I like the nightlife.
Totally. Yes. But from that
era, on the floor.
The pea soup hi-hat.
LMFAO, all them guys are doing that.
Angel Gonna Knock on Wood.
Amy Bolton.
Yes.
And Amy Bolton, yeah.
That stuff. Exactly.
That's so anyhow, the formative stuff, Rolls Royce, go back to 1973.
Yeah, that's more real.
Here's a perfect example. I'm going to do that. I'm going to go on Spotify. Yeah. I'm going to start listening to all this stuff. And that's – Spotify is genius for that kind of stuff. It doesn't – I don't care about – I you know, if I want the new Coldplay, I'll buy the new Coldplay. You know, I have no problem picking it up.
Can I say something real quick? Just real quick.
Is it about disco?
I love disco. No, this is about the streaming, the whole streaming things. I heard what Bobby O just said. And I hear the whole Coldplay, who you say, Black Keys, and all, you know, I actually don't. I didn't know that. All I do know is the number of artists that I and bands that I do know who get nothing from a record company. No love, no nothing, no attention, anything. And that streaming has gotten them an audience. And they are touring, and they are moving merchandise.
But see, it depends what level you're at. Now, the Black Keys are hot right now.
Yeah.
So, in fact, it does their career better by holding...
Sure, by holding the goods.
Back. And same with Coldplay. They're at such a level where they can say, well, we'd rather you buy our stuff
absolutely.
Than giving it away for free. But on the other hand, if you need the exposure, then it's perfect. You know.
Is.
Scott, you asked before, what's the difference between radio?
I was going to say that when you've got streaming situation, however you make revenue from radio, whether, you know, ASCAP, BMI, and all that, I don't see a difference why they couldn't apply the same licensing rules
from streaming. Difference.
And it's not like, well, we can't track it. You can easily track it.
No, they do track it. And it's not that you don't get paid. Yes, you do get paid. You get paid so little.
Little, yeah.
It's basically 0.0012.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a tenth of a cent that you're getting paid for every stream. And it fluctuates up and down depending on where and whatever. But it's still a little bit. On the other hand, you're getting paid from one of the PROs, ASCAP, BMI, and what they're doing is they take a survey of all the songs that are played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then from there, they determine which ones are played the most, and then they go into their big pie of licensing money, and then they say, okay, you were played the most during the survey period, so you get more money. And what ends up happening is... they take a survey period for like a couple weeks.
But the survey thing doesn't make any sense anymore. It's antiquated, the concept of the way they do it. Because right now you can have exact figures of what's getting played. Not well within that week.
Oh, yeah, on radio, absolutely.
Even on the internet. I mean, anything that has data.
But you do on the internet. No, yeah. You do have those numbers.
Right.
You don't on radio. Yes. You could, but you don't.
Yeah. But you could.
Survey. Yes,
I mean, it used to be the paperwork... wouldn't make any sense. But now most of the radios are automated anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's like, you know what? Just give me the list of what you played.
The playlist.
Yeah. And just shoot it out.
But I think the other thing, you know, big difference too, though, is, you know, with streaming, especially when you do premium streaming, where you can stream it offline, is you basically break out of their mold, right? I mean, radio has a defined business model that, you know, advertising play. The radio stations are making money. They're paying licensing fees. I mean, it's been around. It's made money for a lot of people, and that's the way it is. You get into streaming, and you don't have that guaranteed necessarily, licensing and things like that, and people are trying to figure out how to, you know,
but you're
getting paid per stream.
But you can do it. You can easily do a percentage model that says, "Look, here's what's happening: there's a million streams, and here's the breakdown." What we do is we take a pot of money, a percentage of the revenue, because this way it could fluctuate. So let's say they say 70% of the revenue that's coming in goes to the artists, 30% goes to the company, and then 70%, and then you do the list, and the math comes out, and then you get what you get.
The big problem, though, with streaming, if you're on the other side, if you're a online radio station, the big problem is, even though you're only paying out a fraction of a cent, all these stations are still on the edge. And in many cases, what ends up happening is they're basically going into the red in order to keep going. And a lot of them are going to...
If they did a percentage model, they wouldn't, because if they made $1 million 1 week... or 1 month, and 10,000 the next, it's all based on percentage.
No, but they're barely breaking even. They're barely surviving.
They're barely surviving. And only because getting the money in is a completely different story than if, you know, they're a broadcast entity. Broadcast entity has, you know, they've been selling ads for 7 years.
What you're doing is you're guaranteeing a certain amount of money. If you do a percentage basis, then they would be able to exist because a percentage of
percentage of the revenue, right.
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So then if you have... The reason is if you have Spotify or something that's really hot, everyone's doing it, then you make a percentage. If you've got some startup, they don't have as much money, well, then you get a smaller percentage.
I,
I sort of do that, actually.
Yeah. Rob, let me say something.
Yeah, let me just go big picture here for a second, because I've checked out. I don't check out these services nearly as much as Mike does, because no one checks these services out as much as Mike does. But I've checked out Spotify and I've checked out a bunch of the services, and basically, the Holy Grail hasn't been found yet.
That's true.
It's absolutely still too complicated for the consumer. At some point, somebody's going to come up with a solution where you can hear everything whenever you want to. You know, Spotify is the closest, but they have problems with new material and the streaming issues. And
karaoke. Jeez, they got too much karaoke and bad recording.
Yeah, there's a lot of crap in Spotify.
Karaoke? Really?
A lot of filler on Spotify.
Yeah, a lot of filler, a lot of like
alternate
remakes.
Mixes, not good ones.
Yeah, it's and it's not that easy to find exactly what you're looking for. I mean, you can find it eventually. It is a huge catalog. But the Holy Grail is still a place where you can find everything, whether it's old or new, and you can stream it or download it. And that is going to happen.
You think it's going to – see, I don't think
it's – of course it's going to happen. Look how far we've come in 10, 15 years.
Spotify has 14 million songs online. That's
yeah, but the problem – it is. But the problem is if you're a kid and all you want to hear is the new song from whoever and it's not on there, then that's dead as a service to you.
I love that song.
Me too. I wish I had a piece of that
song. But see, here's the thing, though. I would say as long – we have to get to a point where the artist makes money, because without the artist making money, then we're not going to get a lot of new music, and we're just going to get, you know, a bunch of, you know, megastars, and
the
independent scene is going to be really – once, you know, streaming in the independent scene, if you take away the direct sale from independents, you're just going to chop into their market, because it's so – music is so fractured anyhow. So they,
you know what, though? As soon as you start getting into all these rules and people start pulling their product and you can't get it from one service or another, everybody just goes back to pirating.
Well,
there's an easy solution, and,
but see,
and people
I don't
know
even
how to do that.
But yeah, but pirating, or I think, you know, I like the digital download music store, especially with an iTunes match type of a situation, because one of the biggest things about buying a lot of music, you know, like when I buy a new laptop, I got to have a massive hard drive, because I like to keep all my music on my hard drive, because I like to keep it with me. But now if I can have it offsite, if somebody else, I don't have to necessarily have a giant hard drive. Yeah, I may be buying more music just because I can, and I know I'll have it forever. You know, technically,
you know,
I just got to pay for it.
There's something that needs to be said about the indie scene, just because you just mentioned it. If you are an indie band, okay, and you have two options. The first one is to make no money through Spotify, or no money through your own website and your own social channels. You won't choose Spotify because you won't be able to access statistics. You won't be able to reach your fans. You don't have any email. You don't have any data. So
that's what Facebook wants to do, though, is to find ways of tying people's likes.
Exactly, because between the two options, at least if you know who the people that are listening to your music are, you can try to sell something else. You can invite them to see live shows.
Well, that's true.
Spotify, it's like an anonymous place where why would you want to be involved? I mean, you're not making money anyway.
Right.
So at least pick the best option for you.
You can be building awareness. It's exposure. The statistic that I think is the key statistic, and I have no idea what it is, but it would be really interesting to know, is for people who want to get, say, a new Coldplay song, and they can't get it, you know, from Spotify or whatever is their main listening engine that they use, what is the percentage that then either buy it legally or do without it or get it illegally? And someplace that number has to exist, and that really would be what would drive my thinking.
That's true. And
because
and
that's the real decision.
That's an important number, but here's the thing too, that, you know, piracy is never going to end, okay? So it's not like you're going to all of a sudden, you know, flip a guy who's been pirating and to the point where it's like, you know what, I'm not going to pirate anymore because, you know, Spotify.
But you know, but you'd still rather have that guy as a fan, even if he's never going to buy music in his life.
Right.
I'd rather at least he heard my stuff.
No, yeah. And that guy could be the guy that goes out and sees you live. I understand.
Actually, a lot of those kids that are number one. I was really humbled recently because, I mean, call it age or whatever. I don't think I'm necessarily farting dust here, but these kids are all over the pirating. I had no idea to where it's, you know, this guy's like. When I said something about you, you go to, you know, Amoeba Music or whatever, the guy's like, Amoeba, man, I hadn't bought an album in. And he started looking up in the sky like he was looking for a year. He was like, he looked at me like, oh my, dude, are you really from Mars? Like, who buys me? He's really this generation. Right. And I'm not trying to complain and say whatever about it. I mean, they're really like, dude, who buys music? Like, who do you really?
But you know what? So, here's the thing. Not all of them are like that, though.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to add. I was going to add something really important, though. It was cool. That guy, though, who pirated or whatever, that's the dude that when there is a hip artist or a band or some scene that is going on, he spreads it like a virus.
Yeah, because he loves music.
He loves it. He's throwing it around to everybody. Electric Daisy Carnival. There you go.
Well, you know, talking about piracy, Rupert Perry, who's in my book Music 3.0, Rupert is one of the most beloved music executives ever. He was vice chairman of EMI for a long time. And what he told me was, and he goes way back, he said, the day that the reel-to-reel tape recorder arrived on the scene was the day they knew that it was all over in terms of piracy. And they figured, and this is back in the early 60s, they figured already at that point, the record labels were losing 20% of their income to piracy. Now, this is way, way, way back then when you know how difficult it was with the reel-to-reel tape recorder.
Right.
And basically what you're doing is you're waiting for the radio to play the songs that you want
to
pirate them.
I did it, too.
I did it, too.
Yeah, of course I did it, too, with the cassette
deck. With the cassettes, anyway. Yeah.
I was three, but I did it.
Yeah. Oh, I
still remember doing
it
with the microphone.
Okay.
I didn't even have the line in. I didn't have the line.
But the question is that really – you know, taking sales away, or are these just ghost sales that would have never happened in the first place?
No, it's taking sales away. It's no question.
I think it's a little bit of both.
It made me buy the record. I was courting all those metal shops in the '80s. I was going to buy those records.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I bought CDs because the kind of music that I was listening wasn't really available on the radio.
Right.
But my brother, that was into popular music, he had a rack of cassettes, and none of them were original. They were all cassettes that he was swapping with friends. Disco music and all kind of things. So you buy when you cannot find that for free. But if you can find it for free...
On the other hand, if you can afford to buy and it's easier for you to do it, then you buy. If you can't afford it, you're going to steal it.
But for me, it was a necessity because I needed to hear how things were made. I don't really represent a good sample of people that buy music.
I think the key part is everybody at this table... music has resonated with them in a way that made them go into this whole business.
Exactly.
So they really liked it. You've got to realize that there's a lot of people out there that love music.
Yeah.
They love to listen to it, but they're not invested in it. They go, I like that, then I don't like it. I like that, now I don't like it. Yeah. And it's just disposable.
It's an additional to their life. It's not necessity.
I think somebody here at the table said years ago, an album or an artist defined an era or defined a part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where something happened. I don't know. I think right now the disposability of music is just something that, it's like TV. You got 500 channels, whatever.
Who cares?
You just keep surfing. Yeah, I think there's so much product out there that it just does, and there will always be product out there.
Well, I think it's because it's so easy to make, though. The product is so easy to make now. You can do music, call it what you like, but you can do a song in really a short amount of time, and so can everybody.
You mean all the producers out
well,
there?
Well, but you were talking about satellite radio.
Oh my God, that drives me nuts.
You were talking about satellite radio because I've got it as well.
Right.
And now I sit there and I go in my car. I go, I got my iPad. I'm on my iPod. I got my satellite radio. I have so many options in radio. I got normal radio. I got satellite radio, which has got a zillion channels. All of a sudden, I absolutely have way more options than I have time to actually go through.
That's you go radical, you listen
to
nothing.
Right, so now all
just
right.
That's one silence.
How would you like, five options or 8-10 options that were really good options where they had really good DJs that were smart people that had a really good understanding of their style of music that they're researching, and they played it to you, and you hear music that you hadn't heard before.
I'd be down with that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I miss Wolfman Jack myself.
The music you hear is done by artists that actually have more than just 10 minutes invested in it, and they actually what they're playing
enough money to bribe the DJ.
Well, morning becomes right. eclectic. That's why that's yeah, yeah, been yeah. so.
But, my favorite.
Yeah, but, you know, I will, so, I will say to a, certain, to a certain extent, you know, XM Radio kind of fills that need because a lot of their smaller right. channels are, it's, you know, it's passion. You know, there's right. you can tell the DJ's really into it.
That's true.
And they're really that's into true. Whatever that channel is. And so, I mean, it kind of exists. But basically, you know, wrapping this whole conversation up together, you know, what we're doing is, with things like iTunes Match and with Spotify, I mean, we are Rob nailed it. It's not here yet. You know, we're still changing. The whole delivery process is changing how we experience music. And as far as piracy goes, I just don't think piracy is ever going to go away. I think it's always going to be
going to get more efficient.
And I think
it is.
But yeah,
you know, I agree with you in sort of in that one of the things that Apple has proven with hardware. And with software too, but that MP3 players, tablets, they've all been out there. They've just been kind of clunky and hard to use. All of a sudden, Apple comes out with a product that everybody, it's easy to use. Yep. It all talks to each other. And, you know, I just went in, just bought an iPhone. I was a Google person. Why? Because it talks to my Mac and my iPad. And I was like, oh, it's just easy. I think that when we get to entertainment, the software side of stuff, people go, look, I don't want to spend that much time. I don't have that much time to invest in going through all of these industries, nor do I want to.
Right.
All of a sudden, somebody's going to come out with a program, a service, or whatever, and say, look, it's really easy. This is what you do. And they go, I get what I want out of it. No brainer. You pay a little bit of money, and you get on with your life. With the other thousand things.
I mean, but radio was that.
But no.
Turn it on.
It was, but now,
tune it and you're on.
But even now, more so, it exists. It exists in the fact that you've got iTunes.
iTunes, pretty much.
You know, there's not too much that it doesn't have. There's stuff that it doesn't have. But your iTunes, you look it up.
But if you take a streaming service,
with $100, you can get 100 downloads. I mean, it's as close as we're going to get to that. I mean, not to take away from MP3. I mean, from the Amazon MP3. There's other services, but it's just so easy on iTunes. And now with iTunes Match, it's going to make it any easier. If anything, I think the real battle isn't going to be the services. All right, I think what Rob says, you know, someone's going to come up with the ultimate, whether it's Apple just tweaking their business plan or whatever. I think if anything, the fight that we're going to be fighting is going to be with who controls the pipes. I think that's going to be the pipe. Because you've got Verizon that captured data at 2 gigabytes, right?
I love Verizon.
Okay, you can do all these great streaming, but you got 2 gigabytes. You're going to go over that left and right. You've got home ISPs that are, you know, 250 gigabyte caps. You go over that and they start nailing you and throttling your speed. And now with all the backup services and with all the cloud services and things like that, it's the pipes are going to get more and more important. And it's amazing how much they're taken away from people on the data. Our phones are more capable now than they've ever been, and our data caps are just slowly going down and down and down.
Not
you know,
in Japan,
for 10 though. Gigabytes, for 10 gigabytes, America, I think they are going up, but you got to pay for it. Yeah, 10 gigabytes, you have to pay like an extra like $79 or some ridiculous thing a month for 10 gigs on your phone. It's so ridiculous. And you know,
it's a struggle, that, I mean, between giving access and making a profit.
I think that's the fight. I mean, as much as we have all these great phones and they can do all kinds of cool things, it's, you know, what good is it if you can't use it, you know? And that's the only thing that kind of concerns me. Actually, it really concerns me.
It's actually what keeps me basic, to be honest. I haven't even gone over to that Garden of Eden. Because if I get over there and I'm going to want, it's almost like a technological drug that I can't afford.
Yeah.
So that's probably why I'm not really tripping on the whole iPhone thing, because I'm not going over into certain areas that.
But it's also
get jacked.
You know what? The bandwidth issue can also be, you know, fueling a lot of the piracy because of the fact that, you know, if you don't have the bandwidth to legally stream stuff or legally download stuff, it's definitely easier to, you know, get your own collection and download direct to the hardware. So there's a lot of issues that have to be worked out. But I definitely think, you know, working on the delivery system, that's going to be the new center of power. And whoever, you know, what's going to happen is they're going to start charging so much for data, and then someone's going to break through with a truly unlimited plan, and
the Holy Grail.
It's going to go on the cycle again, and people are going to come out with unlimited.
But you know what, though? I mean, the other thing that will be that will play into the conversation is the fact that storage in your handheld device is really cheap, and you can basically, most people can hold everything they'd ever want to listen to in the palm of their hand. And if bandwidth becomes a big problem, people are just going to build their libraries in their phones, and then they're going to have to lower the price for bandwidth.
But the thing about storage on your phone, too, though, is it's competing with a lot of other things. And for instance, you're taking movies and photos. Like, you're just shooting HD movies.
I'm just saying,
on your
phone. Someone prioritizes that they don't want to be paying for bandwidth, that's their solution. I mean, the basic rule is, in today's market, convenience trumps everything.
Yes.
So you always have to – it's usually easy to figure out what is going to get acceptance by what's the most convenient thing in the world. I mean, the first time you want to listen to something on your phone and you don't have a connection and you were planning to stream it, you're going to be kind of angry, and you're going to look for another solution if that happens more than once or twice.
Yeah. You're going to read a book again.
No, God forbid. God forbid. But you know what I mean?
No, you're absolutely 100% right.
It'll be like hard drives. It'll be like, you know, like it was $100 for 100 gigs. Then it was $100 for 200 gigs. Then it was $100 for 400 gigs.
There was a moment a few years ago that I saw some albums released on SD cards.
Yep.
But it just went away.
Because it's cheap.
I mean, Lion. There's no discs anymore. I went, I need to buy the Lion discs. Yeah. There are none. Do it online. What is when I crash?
You can download it and burn it. Or put it on a thumb drive.
I'll tell you what, though. This is definitely an interesting time. And this, you know, we'll talk about this maybe a little bit towards the end
when we do a
retrospective of the year. But this past year with streaming and the cloud, it's, you know, these are pivotal moments that are going to be defining, you know, our information, not just with music, but with movies and with a lot of other types of media. Like Rob says, we haven't reached the Holy Grail yet. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to be producing content. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to battle over how it's going to be delivered. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to battle over the delivery system. So, you know, it'll be interesting where this ends up. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we are going to talk about something that I guarantee will make whatever you're working on right now sound better. So we'll see you on the other side.
Nice.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about all kinds of stuff.
And during the break and after the break.
And during the break, we were talking about all kinds of stuff. But being that this is the last podcast for the year, I really wanted to talk about something that I think is really important. We haven't talked about it in a little bit. And I guarantee you it's going to help everybody out there, whatever they're working on, sound better.
Digital cassettes.
Nope. Oh. You know what that is?
I was so hoping
the
for
one
that.
Thing is EQ.
We're
going to talk about EQ.
Wow. And what does that stand for?
How about the fader?
You know what? The reason why I wanted to talk about that is I recently was helping a friend of mine out, and he was he was mixing this demo that he was working on, and it was really muddy. It was really, really muddy. And he was like, he wanted my advice and needed some help on how to clean it up. And literally all I did.
Tell him to get his ears cleaned up?
No.
First of all.
All I did was go down the line, just tweak tracks just a little bit with EQ. But the main thing was, is off on his master bus, I just pulled out like 500 and it just started cleaning up. Yeah. Everything was just muddying and mushing around those frequencies. And it was amazing just having a little bit of an understanding on EQ and what EQ is and how you can use it and some of the tools that are out there can really help shape and redefine your music or whatever project you was. And his particular thing was that, believe it or not, was a dance thing, was a really groove thing. And once we pulled some of the 500 out and we kind of let things kind of have their own space, it got a little more funkier. It got a little bit more, you know, four on the floor. And it changed the character of the music. So a lot of people, you know, if you're thinking about EQ, you know, well, that just affects the sound. Well, you know what? Your sound affects your groove. It affects the character of the song. It affects the whole thing. So I wanted to start off with just some basic things on EQ and get your guys' response. But the first thing is I wanted to, you know what? Let's talk to our analog guru here. We've got Bobby.
What are you looking at me for?
Bobby, tell us a little bit about EQ. Tell us the different types of EQ between the parametric and the graphic and EQ and filters and all that.
Okay,
give
mate.
Give us a little primer on EQ.
Well, just to define what EQ is, the abbreviation is of equalization that generally was used, the term was used for equalizing frequencies. So you've got a full bandwidth, and in the old days, back in when I was still young, you used to have volumes for different frequencies of the frequency spectrum that you're working on. So you could turn up the highs, treble, or you could turn up the lows, and that was basically what you had, you know, even less than that. But so basically the EQ is a volume, it adjusts the volume of certain frequencies in your music or whatever you're working on. Different kinds of EQs are how they split up those frequencies, to what degree, and how they boost or reduce the frequency range and how narrow that frequency range is. So there are lots of different types of EQs. Some are called parametric, some are called graphic. Some are linear, some are just smooth shelves. So basically, but all that really pertains to is that just means to say that the amount of the frequency, that it either attenuates or boosts, it's just the kind of curve. It's just how much of the frequency that you boost. Somebody just sent an email, and all its friend
it was
frequencies.
Scott, okay, well,
we will just say that was Scott sending an email.
I'm not taking the blame for that.
I'm addicted, man.
Man, that was the so the segue to that is if you had to fix that, for example, right. And you couldn't edit, you'd have to EQ that out.
Yeah. Right.
So one way of doing that was so that frequency range, right. You'd analyze it and reduce the volume. So there you go.
So let's talk about parametric EQs. Because a lot of people, it's amazing how many people don't, I mean, they kind of know what EQs are, but they don't know the differences, and they don't know, you know, parametric EQs versus a graphic EQs. Mm. You know, let's start with parametrics. They usually look like they have knobs, you know, they have sweepable frequencies. Tell us a little bit about the parametric EQ.
Okay, a parametric EQ normally has three knobs, typically has three knobs. One is for the gain or the reduction, so that actually boosts the frequency you've chosen or reduces the frequency you've chosen. And then there is the bell, it's called, or the actual resonance or the Q, and that is how the point, say, for example, we're working on a and you want to boost the frequency of 1 kilohertz. If you chose 1 kilohertz as the frequency, center frequency to boost, you have a knob which was called the resonance. I'm wiggling my fingers, but it doesn't really work for radio. But anyway, you have a knob that you turn, which would be the resonance, and that essentially narrows or widens the amount of frequencies either side of that 1 kilohertz that you boost or cut. So you could, for example, boost 1 kilohertz at a very narrow Q, and you'd get, you know, you get a boost in volume at 1 kilohertz and a couple of dB of either side of that. But if you opened up the Q, you could widen it out.
Right.
And then, of course, you have different shapes of that bell. Right. Sometimes you can change the bell shape as well as the resonance. So it's basically, it's just really like a volume.
Oh, the third knob, though, the frequency?
The bell shape, you can actually change the shape of it, too. Some of them have...
The width of it, yeah.
Right. Width of it, too.
Okay, so that's a parametric, and you'll find parametrics
a
good example.
We call them paramedics, by the way.
A good example is, you know, you'll see them on little stomp boxes, and you'll see them, you know, on the plug. It's the one that doesn't have the bunch of little lines. It's the one that usually has all the little simulated knobs and stuff like that.
I think part of the name of the parametric is because they used to use two pots in the olden days. I've still got one at home, actually, parametric EQ, which just has it's a potentiometer, a knob.
Right.
But instead of having one spindle, it's got two spindles.
Right.
And it's concentric. So basically you'd have one knob, which two knobs on one sort of button, so to speak, and you could turn one knob and it would be the gain and the other one would be the frequency.
API.
API
still has that.
Dual concentric.
Yeah. I mean, you can find a lot of nice parametrics on the 500 series, and API makes some classic parametrics.
All BAM is one of them, made of a horrible one.
Yeah. And there's yeah. And they're really good. You know, they're good for a lot of different things. Guitar players use them a lot. Bass players use them a lot. They're just that. It's a handy little tool to use, specifically because of the swoopable nature, and you can just really kind of dial in things. Let's go.
Sorry, one last thing. What is the most simplest EQ that everybody's mostly heard as a guitar player? A wah-wah pedal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what it is. It's just a one frequency volume control.
Yeah.
Now, see, that's obviously come from someone who spent
too
much time.
But you know what? Awesome. When you talk about subtractive synthesis and filters and all of that, I mean, it's all EQs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is all EQs.
And EQs is in your stereo, treble, bass.
Yeah.
It's two bands, very wide bands.
Hey,
that is in
so let's move on to the next type of EQ.
Yes, parametric.
Graphic EQs.
Okay.
Graphic EQs are...
Normally have dirty pictures on the front of them.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the graphic EQs?
Okay, well, the graphic EQs are essentially what they are is instead of having, say, on a typical EQ, like you Scott mentioned, two knobs would be bass and treble, say that would be a really basic tone control sort of thing. Graphic EQs generally split up the frequency band, and they typically talk between 20 hertz and 20 kilohertz. That's the typical hearing range or audible range. And what they normally do is they split it up, and they split it up the octave, it's called. So they split up a third octave graphic equalizer. That would be a band, 30-band EQ. And what it would be is there would be 30 sliders that will have approximately, you know, say, plus 12 or minus 12 ability to boost or cut at any one of the frequencies.
Right.
And they just... It's basically like a lot of little volume sliders, and that's exactly what they are. They're intended to be like sliders where you could actually push it up and it would boost the volume of that frequency, and it would say the little center frequency. And they're normally – it's quite narrow cues, so you can actually – you can nicely draw in curves. And really useful for live sound reinforcement, for PAs, for stopping feedback or EQing to compensate for room ambience problems, or even studio monitors and stuff like that. White makes a really good one. Clark Technic made another
right.
one.
You'll find graphic EQs in a lot of live sound setups, like you were talking yep. about. Also, you'll find them in studios when you want to correct your room, you know, where you really need that fine control of whatever frequencies you need to control in whatever environment you are, whether you know your room has a little bit too much 200 or whatever. That's when you would use a graphic EQ. But there are some classic graphics that do some really cool things. Like, once again, you know, we'll talk about API. The 560 has a great graphic EQ. That is just one of their, you know, foundation 500 series modules. And the cool thing about their graphics too, and a lot of graphics are like this, but it's a variable Q, is the more you slide that up, the thinner the Q gets. And it really, it makes a nice, pleasant sound. It's a great way to affect, like, drum loops, things like that, where you just want to really like work on the high end and work on a specific set of frequencies. It's definitely a good surgical tool to use to work on whatever it is you want to work on it. But a lot of guitar players use that when they want their tone and they know they want to get rid of a bunch of frequencies and they only want to concentrate on, you know, that mid level.
That mid high.
It's a great, you'll see a lot of guitar players use graphics because of that. What were you going to say something?
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say graphic is one of the nice things about a big band graphic, 30 band graphic equalizer is if you're doing room equalization like a live sound or whatever, and you have modes in the room or areas that are problematic, you'll find the frequency. You will normally find the frequency is causing you either feedback or some, you know, rumble or something like that. And what you'll be able to do is on that graphic, because it's musically tuned, or you'll be able to say, pull down 63 and then magically go up to 120 and pull that down X amount. And what you'll normally see is that you'll pull down the offending frequency, the tonic or the root problem, a lot more than all the others. But then it actually, when you stand back, it gives you a nice graphic representation, partly where the name is, of what the curve or what things you're fixing. So you'd find, for example, you get all like the overtone series essentially with EQ. It's kind of
What's the difference between an EQ and a filter?
Well, they're actually the same. Basically, a filter can be. I mean, a filter and an EQ, essentially, not to confuse, an EQ is an equalizer, and it can boost or cut anything at a certain frequency, a selective or wide band frequencies. A filter is exactly the same thing. It can cut, it filters out, but it can be at any frequency. So you can have a high pass, low pass, mid pass, band pass, there's all kinds of frequencies. So it's essentially a filter would essentially think of it like cutting frequencies only, not boosting, let's just say that. But it is an EQ.
It's an EQ.
It's a different term.
For someone who's just starting, like playing with hardware EQs, the one that's probably the easiest to learn on is a graphic EQ, because when you're done with each of the individual sliders, you can sort of see the curve based on where all the sliders ended up. You can see the curve of the EQing that you're doing. With parametric EQ with a plugin, you can see it on a screen, but normally on a console, you're just doing it by ear and by feel,
basically. It's a different feel.
EQ is like one of my biggest tools, and I think that everyone's been using the right word, and that's EQ curve. That when you use a graphic, it's curving the full nature of the sound into a – so theoretically, if the sound was not changed, it would be flat. But then you want to give it a little more low end. You want to actually visually give it a curve. When you get to parametric EQ, a lot of times it's not as much – you could do boosting, but a lot of times it's cutting. And a lot of times you want to single out a specific frequency within a specific width and be able to a lot of times cut that out to make room for something else. And so parametrics I've always thought of as more surgical. That's why you don't need as many
that's
of them.
That's why we call them paramedics.
Yeah. All right, so I'm gonna ask some pretty basic questions, but there are people that obviously don't know this, and I just kind of want to start from square one. Anybody can answer. There's some settings on every EQ plugin that's out there. Well, not everyone, but a lot of them.
60, 25, 250.
What is a high pass? What does the high pass setting do?
Anyway. Oh, it just means it lets the high frequencies go through. And so if you have a high pass filter,
right?
You basically adjust what the lowest frequency you want it to allow through is, and you'll hear your bass go away. The higher you make that frequency, the higher and higher frequencies.
And this applies to synthesizers as well.
And right. these sounds you'll hear, most commonly heard in the last 20, 15 years at least, is on dance music. You hear a breakdown of a dance song, and you have and you hear go, when you come back up. That's a high pass.
A low pass.
And it's also called a high pass or a low cut.
Right.
Yeah.
I find that actually to be the most useful tool when mixing.
Yeah.
Because it gets rid of a lot of the crap that you don't need anyway. A lot of low frequencies that don't add anything and only gets in the way and muddies up your mix.
In post-production, it's your best friend in post-production, especially for dialogue. First thing you do is get the high pass and roll off all that stuff, 160 below, 200 below, all that rumble.
If you're mixing for television or film or something where the where your output levels are governed by some standards, like, you can't have peaks above minus 10 or whatever, a lot of the low-frequency energy will make your meters register way hotter than what your ears are telling you you're hearing. Mm-hmm. And so with a high-pass filter, I agree, on any kind of mix, you get rid of any low-frequency energy that is not contributing to the material you're mixing, and your meters will be a lot more accurate, and you'll actually be able to get your mix louder because you don't have a lot of that low end energy clouding things up.
And that's where you should look for your clarity. If you're mixing something, especially with music, and you get a lot of mud, just experiment. Throw a high pass and start and things that you may not think. For instance, like guitar or
guitar especially.
Just things where you think you would want that beef, but you realize that down there you're not really getting beef, you're getting more mud than beef. So
even kick and snare getting rid of 30 cycles and stuff like that can make a very big difference.
But what's pretty go ahead.
It's something that I was going to say, and Scott will probably agree, when you're filming when you're mixing for films or you're filming music that goes in films or trailers and stuff, the EQ curve defines the genre of music that you're doing. And in that case, you want a lot of low end. And you were mentioning the 500 hertz that you were cutting to make. In that case, 500 hertz, it's a nice frequency because it makes it round. Strings, classic strings, are really round around that frequency.
Yeah. There was no classic strings.
I'm sure.
What I look at is, because I'm dealing with so many tracks, is that I for some reason I visualize EQ in colors, and what happens is
Cambridge.
When you put all of these,
Quincy Jones and Bruce Swedeen also do that.
Yeah, and to me, when you take a lot of colors, you put it together, you get brown, and you get mud. Then what happens is, and you don't have clarity. So what you start doing is, as you start taking colors away, it allows other colors to come through.
Yeah.
So what happens is guitar and piano are two big offenders that a lot of times when you hear them separate, they sound great.
Yeah.
But you start putting them into a mix.
It's a clash.
And certain wide frequency sounds just just hog everything up.
Clash of the Titans.
So a lot of times what you have to do is you have to cut major holes in stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And a lot of times what you're doing is you're listening to what's trying to cut through. And you say, that frequency is about here. So now let me start scooping out. And one of the big offenders in a lot of frequencies is 500.
Yeah. Right,
right. 500. Because it accumulates into
mind. I know, and it also distorts right away on speaker on laptop speakers. Yeah. So yeah. That's why...
But a lot of times I cut a lot of 400, but not from the full mix. You cut it from elements to allow those other elements like strings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Scott's pointing out something that people who actually know how to EQ do, and that is using EQ to remove frequencies. A beginner mistake is the same thing, like... I don't call myself a music mixer. Luckily, I'm partnered with a great music mixer. But beginning music mixers, like I have often done, tend to think faders only go in one direction. And I'll make something to the point where everything's louder than everything else, and all of a sudden the faders are all up at the top. And Andrew Sheps actually used to joke that I would do the yardstick mix with the smiley face EQ.
Yeah.
You know? Basically, which is tons of bass, tons of treble, and every fader all the way up. EQ, there's the same kind of beginner mistake. A lot of times you'll think, well, I want to hear more mid-range or I want to hear more treble, so you turn it up. But the truth is, it's much more effective to boost a frequency sometimes by reducing around it. You know, you don't have to boost the mid-range on one thing if you boost the mid-range on something else that it was, or if you cut the mid-range on something else that it was competing with. So remember, faders go in both directions, EQs go in both directions.
All right, let's move on to the awesome. Next parameter that we're going to talk about. And we've got three more, so we'll bug through these. This one. This is just as useful, the low pass. Low pass.
The opposite of high pass. It cuts off all the high frequencies. I mean, you decide from where you want to remove it.
Hiss. Get rid of all of it.
Yeah, right. Or unwanted distortions that might happen during the recording process. Yep. That is a tool that can save you. And in some cases, you can save the track and you remove the distortions.
The low pass.
I especially like the high and low pass filter on reverbs.
Oh, yeah.
Returns of reverbs.
Yes.
And using the high pass filter on reverb to get rid of all, low frequencies. The classic one is the Abbey Road reverb, where it's everything below 600 cycles and it just gets rid of all the mud. And high frequencies, 10K,
right.
Rolling that off, and which is, again, the classic Abbey Road. But it's very effective on delays, all that stuff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And now the low pass and what Diego was saying, I just want to reiterate that the low pass is just as important as the high pass, because as much as there's a lot of energy going on down below, you know, in the lower end, there's a lot of noise happening up above, right? So that's another place to go look for getting a little bit of clarity, is getting rid of all that clangy, clashy noise that just turns into, well, white noise, you know? Don't be afraid to...
Well, there's one thing that needs to be mentioned. It's the how many dBs per octave you're using, because the curve of the low pass is determined by the amount of dBs per octave. So you have 12, 24, 36, 48, and then it becomes sharper.
Right.
And so that is an important aspect that needs to be considered when you're using the
right.
That kind of filters.
Typically 18 dB per octave, though, is a classic sort of average.
Yeah. Yep.
Simple.
Why don't you explain what that is?
That means to say that, for example, if you was using a low-pass filter, say you was cutting off at 500 hertz as your choice, it would say that at the frequency you choose to start cutting, at 500 hertz there should be no reduction, but at 499 hertz it should start to reduce, and an octave below 500, which would be 250, there should be 18, if it was set at 18 dB per octave, at 250 hertz from 500, which is half an octave, right. Octave below it, it should be technically 18 dB in volume lower than it is at 500. So that's what the curve's called, and it's a logarithmic curve. Just out of interest, talking about low pass, I've got a website, I just stuck up, I'm not a website, on YouTube a couple of days ago, a couple of buddies of mine who just texted me, just arrived from England. We put up Dirty Drums, it's called, on YouTube. It's Bobby Brazel and Beard. And what it is a drum kit, live drum kit played at my place, but all I've got is low pass. It's just low stuff. And I've got a little bit of top end in it, but the whole thing is made to sound dirty.
Wow.
And it's all,
wow.
And so if anybody wants to hear it, I'm going to be posting all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, post
people want to hear it.
Post it on our Facebook, too.
In synthesizer world, they also use Pulse. Yeah. You see two poles, four poles, six poles, eight poles. The sharpest filter that I've seen was on an analog synth called
Future
Retro 777. It was a 72 dB per octave filter.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounded really sharp, and it was used to emulate, acid, like CB303 kind of filtering.
Right.
So you really need to do the sweeping like you would do in the wah-wah. But the effect in the wah-wah is mostly because you have a lot of resonance.
Right.
Yeah, we're talking about bandpass. Yeah.
Here you don't apply necessarily resonance. You just cut everything.
Let's talk about bandpass.
Is exactly what we're talking about. Low pass and high pass. It actually exactly is that. It's a low pass filter and a high pass filter bolted together. So what it does is it just passes the band. That's where the terminology comes from. The band of what you have the knob set to. So if you had it set at 500 at 18 dB per side, typically you should have 500 hertz pass untethered, but an octave above 500, which would be 1,000, it should be down 18 dB, and the same on the other side of it.
The band of frequencies, just to be clear, the band of frequencies.
The band of frequencies,
hence the bandpass. And where would you find bandpass?
Wah-wah pedal is a classic example.
Yeah.
And also telephone futs.
Yeah.
To make somebody come from a telephone.
Yeah.
Typical delays. High and low.
Or to create in dance music, you use it to create those things that would sweep and start the new.
My friend's got a digital mixing desk, and I call it a bandpass. Oh, wow.
That's a good one. Okay.
One thing I wanted to go back, which is really, really important in low pass, by the way, before we get too far on that, was in 5-1, most people who don't know how to mix in 5-1 make a crucial mistake. They take all of the information they put in the sub. So what happens is they just turn the sub, they feed it to the sub, and what happens is you got high-end information in the sub, and subs really likes simple vibrations. So what you do is you put a low pass on, and you drop it down to like 100 hertz. So it becomes almost like a crossover. Anything above, it's gone.
Yeah. In fact, and this is just, I mixed the music from a dry cleaner in 11.1 at DTS with Fred Marr, and I specifically create elements that only go inside the sub for the drum bass and the low end, because there's no reason to have that kind of material on the other channels. It needs to sit only there, because that's what it needs to do.
Yeah, that's important. Yeah. That's your best friend. On my sub channel, I use it all the time just to make sure I kill anything that's going to come.
It wouldn't sound anyway. Yeah. It would just ruin the process.
And Waves makes a nice little 360 low pass,
All right, let's move on. So we did high pass, low pass, band pass. Now let's go shelf, high shelf.
Yeah.
Tell us about the high shelf.
It's a similar sort of thing, really, except this is, say, for example, it's a high shelf. What it does is, instead of boosting the volume of the frequency that you've chosen, say you're doing 2K, it will actually equally push the volume up of 2K and all the frequencies equal to the right of it, say, if it's a high shelf, and same with the low shelf.
So that's the next one. So it's it makes, like, if you're going to do a curve,
you'd see it. Looks like a shelf. It looks like a flat.
It's more like a treble control. Yeah.
It is a treble control.
Yeah. A shelf. Now, as much as we said, using the other ones to clean up, you can use your shelves to add a little bit of air. That's where you
In the API classic, you have the switch between shelf and parametric, so you can decide how it works.
Now, just so we're talking about getting rid of frequencies and getting rid of, the bad stuff. Sometimes you want a little air up there. Sometimes you want to get a vocal. You want to make it just a little bit of they can't see my hands, but make it a little more air.
Yeah, I wanted to ask that, about the really beautiful, airy, I call it angelic, female vocal that you hear a lot of the, Duffy and a lot of the trance, and even a lot of the Celtic, new age. Even Sarah Brightman, for instance.
Sounds like an angel.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
So
good microphone, good mic.
A good microphone, a good mic.
Well, because the problem is, if you just boost all that stuff artificially after the fact, you end up with really bad sibilance.
Yeah.
So you have to capture it in a way where your S's and T's aren't all sibilant and sharp. That's what sibilance means.
And one of the things that EQ is so important, because there's different philosophies. Some people go, look, my console has an EQ. I'm good. I got EQ. I'm good to go. In film consoles, a lot of times they have a single EQ, and that's what they use. Since I've been exposed to Pro Tools for the last several decades and everything else, I couldn't even begin to imagine only having one EQ.
Right.
Because every EQ has a different color. If it's phase linear EQs, which are totally accurate and almost surgical, or you get something like a Neve EQ, something that's kind of dirty and just kind of fat, and then everything's got a sound. Every EQ has a sound.
Yep. So, So all these things, you obviously, they all kind of, each manufacturer kind of interprets them their own way, but they're all basic concepts. Before we talk about EQs generally, last one is, we talked about the high shelf. Let's talk about the low shelf. Bobby, tell us a little bit about the low shelf.
It's exactly the same as the high shelf, except it's lower frequency. And just as I think Bob corrected me correctly, because I'm not being articulate as best I should be. But basically, for a shelf frequency, a shelf EQ, it actually is a broad Q. It doesn't have a high resonance. It's got a wide resonance. So it actually boosts all the frequencies below that point equally. So the low shelf is the same thing as the high shelf.
Okay. And then where would we use a low shelf? Give me an application for a low shelf.
Turn up the bass, baby.
Tone control on your stereo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and you know,
a little more thump.
If you need to get a sound, like for instance, a crash, right? And let's say you got it out of a library, and it's just not as beefy as you want, and you just want to throw all, you know, as much as you can, you know, just.
Yeah, but I know where you're going. And people will try to boost the low end with the shelf, and they won't get that sound. What they need is a subharmonic generator.
Right.
Well,
But if you want to get them, I'm not even saying to get more than there. If you want to get the most that is there.
Okay.
You know, I'm not 60, saying, 125, yeah, 250.
I'm not saying, you know, you're not going to get the, you know, subsonic booms that you're looking at, but sometimes you can pull a little beefcake
The low air, the waves, it doesn't work just on the super low range. You can also, it goes up to 160 hertz, I think. Anyway, it starts to be in the range that you would use with a shelf, but the kind of effect that it creates is different because it generates additional.
And our base too.
I'll
give you a quick real life example, because you must be going to ask something like this.
Sure.
Band pass, low pass, high pass. I have clients that do music for people that have different sets of speakers, and I generally try and find out what they're listening on. Lots of times I have to mix for laptops, but when I mix for a laptop, I actually obviously plug it into my laptop and listen to it. But lots of times I put the EQ of what the speakers are expected to hear on my mix. It's not the final mix, but it's the mix I send to the client to check it out. So if, for example, I've got a lot of bottom end in it, and it's nice in my sub bass, I'm at my Genelex and I'm having a good old time there, they're not going to hear 30 hertz on their little laptop.
Right.
So I don't need to hear it. So I just shelve the top and the bottom off. So really I get quite nasty. About 55 hertz, I start rolling it off quite quickly.
Wow.
And that's just a bandpass filter. It's 50 hertz and it's 10K, but that's all it is. So it's not always the sound effect. It's just a gentle EQ.
Well, I wanted to go over that. That's an excellent point. And I wanted to go over all these different, you know, parameters on your EQ, because I guarantee you, if you listen to what we just said and learn what each one of these little adjustment does, it's going to make an immediate impact on how you use it, because you'll be able to start not just, you know, mixing, but actually starting to put a little bit of color, start sculpting your sound a little bit.
And there's one other version you missed, which is something some people use and a lot of people don't. And that's threshold-based EQ.
Oh, why don't you explain?
Dynamic
EQ. Absolutely, dynamic EQ. Right. Because that, I find that I live with dynamic EQ. Because what that means is at certain volumes, certain frequencies act differently. Even dialogue. Somebody, a female, starts essaying, and all of a sudden there's certain frequencies that are very
Hurtful,
yes.
And actually, a de-esser is the best example of a dynamic EQ that people would deal with.
And so a lot of times, I just sit there and say, hey, you know what? Anything above this, cut it. Or on low end, sometimes I invert it, where I've got like, bop, 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 and I want to make it bigger, so as it comes up, I'm going to actually add more low end. It looks like it's an expander, I guess.
I mean, this kind of EQ, it's usually perceived as a combination of a compressor and an EQ. The EQ basically is the frequency that the detector of the compressor detects faster and first.
But when you start getting 6-8 bands of compression, all of a sudden there's a real fine line between is it an EQ or a compressor.
Oh, no, no, definitely, definitely.
Here's an example for people to play around with if you guys have got
I just mentioned that because if you look into the plugin list, you won't find anything with that name.
What were you saying?
Sorry.
No, I was just saying, here's an for people listening, that if you want to play around with something at home, wherever you are, studio, home, analog, digital, whatever, set up an instrument, vocal instrument, it can be a vocal or instrument, put it up on one track, and then take another track and have the EQ and use either auxiliary send or however you want to route it to your second channel. So essentially what you'll have is you have your instrument on a normal channel, and you have the second channel of the identical instrument, but only EQ the identical instrument, only EQ the second channel, and have it off, and then slowly add it into your mix. Because a lot of people we're talking about EQs, but as an advanced engineer, which I'm not, but I'll just say, imagine if I was, I wouldn't necessarily just grab an EQ on a channel and just start EQing away unless you need to. We often do parallel processing and we sometimes do phase inversion processing, where it's a combination of multiple kinds of EQs.
Right.
And we actually use different channels on the console to add it in at certain spots to reduce S's, to increase bottom end, to use the Fletcher Munson to try and enhance sound so it sounds like it's loud and it's not. But anyway, without getting too scientific on it, but just to up the ante a little bit, for people that want to play around with some EQ, set up an instrument, whatever it is. If it's giving you a problem, set it up. Play it and then take an auxiliary send or whatever it is and send it to another channel and start EQing just the second channel. And then if you like, when you play around, if you want to add a bit of top tier, say your bass, you may be able to just make that one channel. If you soloed that EQ channel, it would sound, whatever you want to make it sound like, but make it sound really bright and spanky, and just touch it in your mix and you'll find most probably you actually don't need as much EQ as you thought you did in the first place. Or if you have a really bad vocal, you may want to put that same EQ, same kind of EQ up against the vocal and invert the phase of it, and you may find.
I just say,
you know what? That's an awesome tip.
Because inverting phases is a great noise reduction.
Because if you do that, that's a great way to change the character of your sound without changing the sound. It's almost like adding a whisper track to a vocal. Vocal, and then you double it with a whisper on it.
That's
but
awesome.
To do it with with EQ, I mean, it really does.
I used to do it with a Dolby. I mixed Foreigner once on one of the singles, and Lou Gramm's a great singer, and he's got a natural harmonics in his voice, just sounds beautiful. But I wanted to make him sound good, and he was on analog, and I didn't want to boost the hell out of it with a 8200, make it hiss like hell. So I just had a Dolby A, which is a noise reduction system. I put it in record enable, so it's synthetically making harmonics because it was expecting to go to recording tape, but I'll just tuck it in underneath his voice and it makes it sound like an oral exciter and a
stretch.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's many things. So
all of a sudden on eBay, WAs go up.
By the way, something else that is a little different from EQ, but it connects with what you just said, especially when you're using distortions. If you multiply the track and you apply distortion just on the high end or just on the low end, you avoid the having the distortion killing your sound. You add the distortion character, but you don't kill the sound, because usually with distortions, it destroys the low end.
Right.
But if you want to keep the low end, and these are all tricks that you can use for when you do stuff for films or film music for films.
If you do in the exact same thing, if you again, a little more advanced, but just let's just pretend somebody's listening to them, goes, hey, I know this guy's boring me.
Right.
Give me something else. So say, for example, you're doing that sort of thing. You could use an EQ to drive the front end of another processor, like your reverb sometimes, but just say you want to put a compressor on something, you can actually have, boost your 300 hertz or whatever you want to do and make that drive the compressor. And what you find is the compressor its ballistics will behave based on a really amplified volume of certain frequencies. So you start to compress, it reduced the volume of the thing based on a higher frequency in the mix or lower frequency. So just play around. Use EQ as an insert.
But we should say definitely EQ is one of the most powerful tools we have ever, really.
And one of the things I think that in my circles on the sound design side that everybody's really just really going after is multi-band saturation. And that seems to be what everybody, and it's a combination of compression and EQ. Because what you're doing, like you said, I want to keep the low end not saturated.
Yep, right.
But the high end, especially the mids, warm them, drive them a little bit. And some drive aggressively.
Yep.
And some just give you an extra little something.
Well, you know what? We're gonna take that up, because what we're going to do in the new year is we're going to go back to the basics, and we're going to take some of these boxes and some of these concepts, and we're going to talk about them. And that's actually a great segue into the next podcast because we're going to talk a little bit about compression and multiband compression.
Nice.
Thank you know? God.
Because they go, they kind of go nowadays hand in hand, you know.
Oh, definitely.
Finishing up on EQ before we go because we're running out of time. Well, you know, actually
may I interrupt
no
you really quickly? Just before,
go ahead.
Before you say that, and it just it will cap what we just spoke about. For everybody listening that would like to learn a little bit more about this and whatever, there is a fantastic piece of software, the best really that I've heard for forever. It's called Ozone 5 Advanced. Get the advanced,
oh,
don't
yeah.
think.
I was trying to get
it's expensive, it's a grand, don't buy it. Just download a free B trial for 14 days. But knock yourself out because what it has is everything we've spoken about. It's got multi-band compression, yeah. Yeah. selective. It's got a bunch of stereo.
It's got everything.
It's got everything in it. And it's my favorite box. But I just want to say that you'll learn a lot from what it does because you can independently insert, remove different parts. And you'll learn about EQ and everything. And while you're at it, if you really want to study and understand sound and EQ, download the RX2 by Isotope because that is the EQ that kicks everyone's ass. I mean, it's just fantastic.
Special editing. Wow. Yeah.
Well, EQ is important, and you know, just listen to you know what Bobby's explained. Understand your tools, and then just start messing with them. You know, and it really, I guarantee you, if you just increase your understanding and mess with your whatever you're working on, it's going to sound better. See how I wrapped that up?
You did.
Nice. So nice.
I'm going to be a granddad. Can I be one granddad real quickly? Just we're finishing off EQ. For people that play music really loud, I just want to tell you guys, don't kill yourselves because I know it's cool now. You're jamming away at 20 and you've got your iPod on really loud and you go into clubs and you're hammering away all night, popping ecstasy and dancing around. Done that, been there. But mates, wear earplugs because we're talking about EQ. You won't hear what we're talking about. You will start to damage your ears massively. Yeah. So just be careful, lads.
And use earplugs.
Edemotic are the best.
Yeah. What kind of earplugs?
Edemotic for $10. They're
really?
The best. Yeah.
See?
Yeah. They
where do you get them?
No, I thought he was talking about edamame. I thought maybe put the edamame.
I was thinking the same. I was thinking, wow, that is really
edamotic, they're called, yeah.
I'd like to find
out. I use the ones that you use, the one that you use when you go swim. The
plastic ones.
Yeah.
No, these are specific
in
to, they're actually made by a company that started as a hearing aid manufacturer.
Mm. Oh, right.
And what they also make in-ear... You know, molded ears and everything.
Right.
But what these will do will cut down the level without affecting the frequencies.
Oh,
so
nice.
It goes down 10 or 20 dB depending on which model you get.
Edemotic.
Oh,
E-T-Y-M-O-T-I-C.
Say that again.
Edemotic. E-T-Y-M-O-T-I-C.
It used to be H-E-A-R, didn't they?
Hey, Bobby, that's a great idea because you really want to protect your hearing and... Other Bobby, thank you for the suggestion, and we'll see if we can get that link posted on our website. But I will say that, guys, this is the last podcast of the year, and looking forward to next year. Before we go, though, we've got some business that we need to take care of. First thing is we're going to do another giveaway.
Nice. All right.
And Bobby Osinski.
He's 24.
Bobby Osinski has another book that we're going to give away. Wow. And let me tell you, this is one book that I want. And why don't you tell us what the book is, Bobby?
Oh, it's a Studio Builder's Handbook. And what it is it tells you some of the ins and outs of modifying and improving the acoustics of your listening environment for not a lot of money. It doesn't cost a lot to improve your listening environment. It costs a lot to isolate your listening environment, and it goes over some of that as well. But this is more about how, without having to spend more than $150, you can really make a big difference.
Okay, we're going to make this real easy for the giveaway. We're going to be giving it away to listener number 25 who sends us an email at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And then just put Bobby O's book in the subject. And by the way, we don't keep your email address. All right. So don't be afraid because I know everybody says, well, you know, keep their email address in the mailing list. And, you know.
Now, can they enter more than once, though?
You know what? I just want to see number 25. You know? So it's going to be early, so you want to get your email in, but it's going to be number 25, so we'll see what happens. So on that note, got another giveaway. Rob, you have anything you can talk about you're working on?
Working on getting ready for the holidays. Actually, I'm currently doing some music for Mr. Gershon's company. We're working together on a project.
Nice.
It is nice because the client's happy.
You're working with me. I'm working with Mike. It's all like,
you know, it's
giant happy family.
But I've been doing that and just a bunch of rewiring and rebuilding of the studio still, but it's all going well and looking forward to next year.
Bobby, how about you? You working on anything?
I am indeed. I'm actually, believe it or not, starting this silly sample library again, the Audio Bro library. We're starting kicking off at the end of January because last year was a bit of a wasted year. We didn't get much done, enough done anyway, doing that. But you know what I've been doing? Quite fun. You should check it out. I've just recently, actually just finished the Christmas show today. I've been helping Rob Williams with he's got a radio show on his website called Radio Rude Box. You should check it out. It's quite fun. It's not for the pale of heart. But yeah, anyway,
that's Bobby Unleashed.
No, it's not. It's Robbie. It's not me. I'm just one of his guests on the thing. But it's kind of fun. So
he's an accomplice.
It's been fun.
Diego, how about you?
I am finishing the material for my presentation at CES because I'll be presenting at the DTS booth. So I'll be doing this presentation where I show a little bit of my work, the 11.1 mix of music from a dry cleaner, the making off of the sound signature, of DTS sound signature. So I'm putting together a video that I'm going to use to, you know, behind me. So there's going to be a video and then I'm talking on the video. Yeah, that kind of stuff. And building stuff as well, because one instrument triggers the idea for the next one.
So I bet you've already got three instruments ready to roll, huh? Knowing you.
There is some secret stuff around the house, yes.
Forrest, how about you?
I just got back from doing my first ever drum clinic tour in the Southeast. Drum clinic, it was between doing drum clinics and like jazz, big band master classes kind of thing.
Nice.
That and the thing that deep breath for this one for me, I'm gonna have my first video released.
Nice.
And it's simple. It's just me and the grand piano. And I'm looking forward to releasing a lot of my music now.
Candelabra?
Is there no, it's not. Maybe on the next video. The next video with the one.
That's awesome. Scott, how about you?
Hello.
Well, I'm working a little bit on your project and working a little bit on your project.
It's painting a fence at my house.
It's been, you know, it's finishing up a bunch of things before the holiday. I've just been also fun. I've been just finished up mixing a movie, Old School, which I really, really liked. It was just me and the director in my room, period.
Wow.
No backfield, no nothing. Just sitting there working on sounds, doing a little editing, doing a lot of mixing, no politics, just sitting there doing it. And it was great and experimenting, and it's a great little indie film. We're not sure it's very, very good, but we're not sure, you know, how it's going to get released and all that. But we'll do a final mastering session in January. But it was kind of a great experience. And I actually went in didn't wanting to use the plugins I normally use.
Nice.
I wanted to start in a whole different concept. And we explored, and it was 4 weeks of just going after it, and it was quite fun. A lot of music stuff.
Great. Bobby, how about yourself, sir?
I've been really busy, actually. I'm finishing up the Snoo album, and I just found out they wanted to record a couple more songs, so I guess I'm...
So you're not finishing it.
I'm finished. But it's fun. Let's see what else. I just finished the Ken Scott book, Ken Scott's memoirs, wow. One of the five Beatle engineers, producer for Elton and Bowie and Supertramp, etc. And let's see, the second edition of my Music 3.0 book just came out.
Wow.
And let's see what else. Oh, I'm also producing a pilot for a 3D TV show.
That's music
awesome. 3D wow. TV show.
Yeah. Yeah, but what have you been working on, though?
Thought you said you were busy.
That's good. Yeah. Great.
Well, how about you, Mike?
How about you, Mike?
I'm just... wrapping things up,
working on
a project with Scott. And I will tell you this, you know, This is the first time me and Scott have worked together, but sometimes it pays to just, you know, work with the right people. And
oh, yeah.
Just
sometimes. In my book, it always works.
But here's a good example of, you know, dealing with where I work and just, you know, they're looking for places to go and they were doing, you know, they had their traditional people that they use. And I just said, you know, if you want to be the best, let's just go to the top. And so we had a meeting with Scott and things worked out and we're working together and went to playback. And you can just tell. It's like the sound effects were amazing and everybody's happy. And it's just, you know, if you're going to do a project, start at the top and then work your way down. Don't start at the bottom and try to work your way up. Just go to the top and then, because you know what? It may work out. You know, you'll be surprised. And it was great. And it's been a good experience and everybody's happy. And you know what? It makes me look like a hero.
Thank you, Mike.
That's awesome.
But you know, it's just a great experience. And so we'll continue when I actually have to mix the thing on Wednesday. But, but other than that, yeah, just getting ready for the new year. I can't believe it's 2012 already, which is crazy. I'm looking forward to the next year because things are changing. And I just, if you get a chance, and even you guys here, if you ever get a chance, go back and listen to some of our early shows. I mean, do you realize that when we first started this podcast, I hadn't even bought anything from iTunes? I was like, that's the weird thing.
No.
Yes. That's the weird thing about, and actually the cool thing about this podcast is if you listen to the early shows, you can kind of hear how everybody's slowly adapting and evolving and how the industry is kind of changing. And I was, when I was prepping for the show tonight and talking about, you know, iTunes Match and that whole thing, I was like, man, you go to the early shows and, well, don't listen to them too closely.
Just don't go.
But it's weird when you discover, I mean, we're still talking about Tower Records and, you know, and things like that.
That'll make me nostalgic.
Yeah. And so now here we are in 2012 and I have no idea what's coming around
which
the
corner. Is the I don't care thing. About the blowing the world blowing up. I'm ready for
not knowing where we're going. That's the best.
So, yeah. So how many years now?
Five?
No, six years.
Six.
We're gonna be finishing our sixth year, starting our seventh year.
Whoa. It's at a 7-year itch.
Isn't that crazy? Mm. Yeah.
So none of us had gray, and it was just all, you know, muscle bound LA beach guys.
Rob was a lot happier back then.
That was a much better movie. Maybe 2012
is me. But hey, guys, you know, all I can say is thank you for, you know, sticking it out and the ones that we've picked up along the way and the ones that have been here for the whole time.
Thank you.
It's been awesome. This is fun. It's kind of like my poker night. And I appreciate all you guys there. And I also want to say thank you to Jeremy. Jeremy does awesome job.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Hey,
Jeremy does a lot of the heavy lifting. He edits all the shows and he writes all the blurbs and he really just really helps push this thing.
And Jeremy's
through.
A pretty good editor, isn't he?
Oh, he's a fantastic
and
Jeremy editor.
Is how good is he EQing?
All right, well, it's time to say goodbye. So if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at Facebook, facebook.com/audionowcast. You can also send us to audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
So obnoxious.
That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Nowcat.com?
audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Great.
My math needs a break.
So no cats network.
All right. Well, hey, before it gets too out of control, thanks for listening. We appreciate all the listeners out there. And you guys, you have some awesome comments. You sent some really great letters in. And we appreciate it because without that feedback, it would be really, really lonely.
We love you, Cleveland.
You know what? I will say we've got somebody from every state in the union.
All right.
The holdout
Hawaii?
Was South Dakota?
Yep. Wow!
Wow!
For the longest time, but South Dakota has come
how many countries?
Oh, I lost track. We're like 30 some odd countries, and
wow. So we got 80 people.
We're
50 states.
At least 80 people.
Germany,
countries?
Yeah. Germany and the UK. Yeah, we're actually Germany. We're very strong in Germany.
It's nice.
We like the Germans.
Time for a tour. Right.
Yeah. But we, you know, if you send us tickets, we will come to your town.
And we'll do the podcast there.
I think Paris, Germany, it's all good.
Yeah,
good
we'll eat whatever you provide.
Absolutely. Well, wait a minute.
All right. Well, hey, for myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy holidays.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.